Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. We all know that transportation in Boston can be a challenge under the best of circumstances. For Black bus riders, that can mean spending 64 hours more per year on the bus than to white counterparts. The Livable Streets Alliance has responded to that 2017 finding from the Metropolitan Area Planning Council with a new report which calls on the MBTA to prioritize equity in its bus service by boosting its fleet, making commutes shorter, and significantly expanding routes, especially those that serve many people of color. Joining us now is Stacey Thompson, who is the executive director of the Livable Streets Alliance and a co-author on the report. Stacey, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Thanks for having me.
We are also joined by Mella Bush Miles, who is the director of transit-oriented development and the T-Riders Union at Alternatives for Community and Environment. She's also a former special advisor to the Fairmont Indigo Transit Coalition. Mella, thanks for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
And let's hear from you on this. Do you think equity is a priority issue for the MBTA? Are you a bus rider of color familiar with these issues? Tell us about your experiences. You can call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Or you can tweet us at Radio Boston. Okay, let's begin at the beginning. Stacey, why did you write this report?
We wrote this report because we talked about the 64-hour statistic in a previous report, and it really stuck. And the Globe talked about it, and BUR talked about it. And we said, well, instead of talking about it, what if we tried to solve the problem? What would it take? We've been talking to folks like Mella for years. They've told us there weren't enough buses. So we said, let's look into it. We did simple analysis with the T's own data, with census data, and it turns out we just simply need more buses, and that more buses and more service alone would go a long way to fill that equity gap.
And I just a clarifying question there. If I read the report correctly, mm-hmm. more buses to meet the current standards,
yes.
not even future needs or growth in population or increased congestion, et cetera. Is that correct?
Yes. Today, if you are taking the bus system, the MBTA bus system, you will not meet its service standards. It is 67 buses short from meeting its own service standards, let alone being able to fill the equity gap in our Black and brown communities.
Okay. So the set of recommendations you've come up with, they go along with the MBTA's Better Bus Project, which is part of an $8 billion modernization initiative that includes subway fleets, updated tracks, and reinventing the bus system. What recommendations do you make to add to the Better Bus Project?
Sure. The recommendations are threefold. The first is build more bus garages today. That is the key limiting factor in having enough space for buses, for electric buses of the future. Build at least two when we identified land where they could do that on land they own today. Secondarily, order at least 200 additional buses. They could order 400 or 500 and put them to good use, but at least 200 and do that today. And then third, and perhaps most importantly, is build out a good way to measure the equity impacts of the system. Cities like Seattle, like San Francisco, have worked out really great mechanisms for actually determining if they are properly serving communities of color, and we can learn from those cities and adapt and build our own ways to measure our impact properly.
1-800-423-8255. 1-800-423-TALK is the line. What is your lived experience on the MBTA? Do you take the bus? Is it sufficient? Do you wait too long? Are there enough buses available to you? Do you feel safe? Call and share your experiences. Mella, let me turn to you. The report already indicates that the MBTA is essentially underservicing on bus lines. There's a lot of information about disparities in communities of color. What is the lived experience of people who are being underserved by the MBTA buses?
I'll speak about something we call ghost buses.
Great.
You're standing waiting for a bus to come, and you have some app, and you're watching it count down. You might be in Dudley Station, and you'll see the bus is arriving, the bus is arriving, the bus is arriving. And then all of a sudden, the bus disappears off of that app or off of that countdown clock, And the next thing you know, it says next bus 21 minutes or 20 plus, which means we don't know when that bus is ever going to come. So people get ghosted. We get left standing on platforms, standing out in the cold. The subway broke down. Oh, how would that impact a bus rider? Because there are insufficient buses to go around, if the subway breaks down, they have to provide some alternative service to the subway riders, so they send buses over. Where did they get the buses from? There are no extra buses or drivers. They take them out of the community and send them over to the subway riders, and the subway riders are accommodated because of that diversion. But folks are left standing, for example, on the 23 bus line, which has no other alternative but that one bus. We've been standing there 45 minutes, an hour. Sometimes the bus, you just think the bus is never going to come. I've walked all the way from Four Corners to Dudley, and the bus came when I was almost to Dudley Station.
So, Mella, that's got me thinking of that old thing about the butterfly effect, right? So, you know, the butterfly flaps its wings and there's a hurricane on some other part of the planet. 45 minutes, unreliable. I can't be sure the bus is coming. How does that effect wave out into the rest of everyday life?
You're late. You're late for work. You may lose your job. You may be working minimum wage jobs. You may have to pick up your child. If you're late to picking the child up from daycare, after the time that they're supposed to be picked up, it starts, the meter goes up, and you have to pay $1 a minute for every minute that you're late. It is going to hit you in the pocket. It can cause you to lose your job. You may be late for school. You may be kept back. We've had all of these things be reported back to us from students, from the youngest person to the oldest person.
So, Stacy, some colleagues and I, when I was at Boston College, used federal data sets and looked at these challenges. Yep. And what we found was that race and low-income status definitely made you, first, more likely to use buses mm-hmm. as your form of transportation than other forms of public transportation. And second, to have longer commute times. Third, that those two things were intersectional. That the intersection of your race and your socioeconomic status would compound those problems.
Yep.
So this is not a uniquely Boston challenge, correct?
It is not uniquely Boston challenge. You know, the legacy of redlining lives on. And what we would really like the MBTA to do is to say that systemic inequity exists, that systemic racism exists, and that we have a legacy of it. If we don't actually look at the legacy of systemic racism and try to pinpoint solutions, then we're going to continue to exist in this unvirtuous circle that you were talking about, where, you know, low-income and communities of color are disproportionately impacted. They can't get to jobs and services, and then they remain in that low-income status and sort of going in circles. I think the beauty of this report is that working with our community partners, we're just asking for more buses. We're not asking for a multi-billion-dollar 20-year plan. This is just more buses is one step toward addressing that problem.
I sort of already know the answer to this, but when I hear you say we're asking for more buses, not a multi-billion-dollar plan, of course, the first reaction is, well, buses aren't cheap. So aren't you asking for a lot more?
No. I mean, we are expanding commuter rail service to the tune of hundreds of millions of dollars for a relatively small population. The bus network serves significantly more people than the commuter rail does. It is expensive, but we can build two facilities, get 200 more buses, and have those serving 100,000 additional people in less than 5 years.
1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Do you see evidence of systemic racism, of systemic inequity in public transportation? Have you lived that experience and what has it meant to you? Call and share your stories during the conversation. So I'm going to add another voice. I want to add a different policy perspective. To do that, I'm going to bring in Greg Sullivan, the research director at the Pioneer Institute, which is an independent, nonpartisan, privately funded research organization that seeks to improve the quality of life in Massachusetts. Greg, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you.
So, Greg, what's your reaction to the report's findings and its recommendations?
Well, first of all, I'd say that this is a terrific report. It's really unusually great because Livable Streets has laid out a rich history and background, but more importantly, it's made very specific, detailed, data-driven recommendations, and you don't see that every day. It was written by Andrew McFarland, who was a lead author, Ari Ofsivit, who everybody knows about. Ari is a great man. So this is...
And Stacey Thompson here in the studio.
Yeah, really, really encourage people to read this, especially I would encourage members of the state legislature to read it. And so that's my general observation. The Pioneer Institute has been very, very heavily involved in making recommendations about the MBTA. So anyway, I take my hats off to this organization for having produced such an excellent report.
Greg, is there anything that you think the report is missing, or are there any recommendations that you thought were too big or too much or an overreach?
No. I would say, you know, what we have here is a unique argument that I haven't heard, which is linking in the concept that when you have huge swaths of the city in Greater Boston area which do not have rapid transit service, they have bus service or no service, then you have created an inequity, and it breaks down and blossoms into a racial inequity. Now that is really powerful and completely believable to me, and I think that's kind of hasn't been part of the dialogue, but it's a very valid argument. So that's why I think that it's adding something new and something very important.
So one last question for you, Greg, and then I'm going to ask you to stay on for the rest of the conversation. Let's say funding wasn't an issue, and tomorrow the Fiscal Management Control Board allocated everything that was necessary. How would one proceed? What would be essential for doing this successfully?
When I read this report, when I was reading this report, I was thinking that a transit bus costs about $300,000. That's a round figure. So even though 200 times $300,000, that sounds like a lot of money, but not in the scheme of an $8 billion capital investment. But the report points out that in order to facilitate the additional buses, you have to have at least two garages.
A place
that's
to put
a big
them.
Deal. And you have to have storage sites. The report even identifies the storage sites, which was like referring to before, which is really very admirable. So, but I want to make my pitch about an alternative approach that I think would support livable streets in that arguments. Is that so? Around the country, many transit agencies have outsourced bus service. In fact, over the last 10 years, the outsourced bus service has gone up by 93% ridership, while non-outsourced
are you pitching privatizing the MBTA?
Huh?
Are you pitching privatizing the bus service on the MBTA?
Well, the MBTA does have a little tiny bit of outsourced bus service, but it doesn't. But by and large, it doesn't. Like 99.8% that is all done by employees. So what I'm saying is that if you outsourced bus service for expanded service, the vendor provides the buses, the drivers, repairs the facility, and stores it. So we advanced this idea, and it really had made a lot of headway. In fact, the governor's office supported this. To outsource one third. In the end, they didn't do it, though.
So, Greg Sullivan, I want to check in with Mela on this because I think I saw your eyebrows go up a little bit. As a resident, as an advocate, what's your reaction to that proposal?
Public transit is public transit. It is being paid for by the taxpayers. We support it. We pay for it with sales tax, gas tax, all kinds of taxes go into that. This is our public transportation system, and it's a public good. Privatization and union busting is not something that we would ever support, whether it's the riders are not asking for that. You have dedicated employees who have been working there 30, 40 and more years, working in these systems. Sending it outside to some private system takes the power out of the people and away from the people, and we do not support such a thing.
So let me follow up on that, Stacey, and ask, to the extent that if privatization would allow for greater efficiency and therefore more investment in more buses, in more frequent participation in routes, et cetera, is there anything attractive in that?
What I would say is that privatization is not a silver bullet. You know, there's sort of this dream that if we bring the private sector in, it will magically solve our problems. I can't actually look to very many examples where that is true. There are sometimes very unique case sets where it's helpful to have a private contractor. But I would agree with Mela in that we have a great body of men and women who I spent time with in a bus garage just a couple of weeks ago who are really experts, who are really good at their job. And if we are concerned about efficiencies in the way that the T operates and the way that that staff operates, then that is where the governor should be spending some time and attention to make sure that we support those men and women.
1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK to join the conversation. Tom from Brighton's on the line. Tom, go ahead. What's on your mind?
Hi. Yeah, one thing, I'm really glad you're doing this program and attention is finally really being paid to the bus system. One thing that's always struck me is the amount of time and effort and money and attention that bike lanes get, and how much we're putting into that kind of infrastructure versus buses. You know, I ride the 57, finally the harsh bus lane in one direction, but there's been a bike lanes all along that area and in other parts of Barton, Alston and the region for years. And I think a lot of it's just who uses buses and who uses bikes.
So, Tom, I'm going to take it back from you there just because your line's a little bit poor quality. You're cutting in and out. Stacey does want to respond to that, though, so I'm going to let her do that. Go ahead, Stacey.
Yeah, so my organization actually worked very closely with the city on that bus priority project. And I would actually say that the bigger issue is that both the bus system and the bike system have been underserved for a very long time. The city of Boston is moving much more slowly than their urban counterparts across the country in terms of building bike infrastructure. In our black and brown communities, they also don't have safe biking infrastructure. And any of our EJ partners will tell you that. So I would say that we need to stop prioritizing single occupancy vehicles and start prioritizing modes that move people more efficiently, which is people who can walk, people who can bike, and people on buses.
So, Mela, at the opening, we talked about the 64-hour per year differential between an African-American rider and a white rider. That is such a staggering number. What will it take for the city to, the MBTA, to embrace the racial dimension of this inequity and make investments to change it? Does the MBTA, do you think that there's a will and a desire there to do it and the public needs to support it? How do we gain traction?
Well, first of all, the Fiscal Management Control Board is about to be, what do we call it, sundowned. Their terms will end. It was a 3 to 5 year project and they'll be gone. We, prior to them coming on, we had worked to get community voices onto the board of directors, and we had a seat carved out for that. And then when Governor Baker came in, he dismantled that board and installed this fiscal management control board. If we can get the voices of the people and the riders in so that real riders, people with real-time lived experiences can actually get onto those boards and be able to have those conversations and be able to be the change. I think that we can move the needle on some of these things. It's because there's a disconnect. You're putting people on the board who may not have any experience in transportation planning. We have someone who's an amazing housing specialist, and she's on that board. But she doesn't really fully understand what's happening. And so the way that we're going to move it is to change what's going on at the MBTA, because you don't know a person's experience until you rode a mile on their bus.
All right, so let's bring in a caller voice there who I think will add to your point. Kira from Concord, go ahead.
Yes, hi. Hi, Stacey. Hi, Tantia. Hi, Stacey, and hi, Mela.
Hi, Kira. Go ahead.
Hi, Tantia, and you all. I am interested to know about whether the buses are also helping. I'm a CNA in health aid. And I was wondering about also accommodations for people of all kinds who have challenges, physical challenges. And I was wondering if it's going to be that I'm pretty sure it's going to come to be. It's just a matter of time and money.
Okay, Kira, thank you for that. We're very short on time, so I want to turn back to Stacey. What about the dimension of people with disabilities?
Yeah, no, I mean, this is actually critical. We have a high number of people who have mobility issues who use our bus service every day. And, you know, another reason to consider, you know, the state has a mandate to make sure that our buses are ADA compliant. That can get muddled with privatization. So another value add to make sure it takes care of all people. But this actually goes back to the city. We only 8% of our bus stops have shelters, and we need accessible sidewalks and other ways to make our bus system more accessible. So I totally hear you.
Okay. And Greg Sullivan, you know, 30 seconds or less, what is your reaction to the question of governance and how to get more community participation in governance?
The Livable Streets report calls for a member of the ridership community to be on the Fiscal Management Control Board. I think the Fiscal Management Control Board is going to be renewed, by the way. But I agree with that, and I think that's a very sound suggestion.
Okay, and Mella, one last thought from you. What do you want listeners to understand that they may not know about bus equity?
There's a real challenge. Race and class are major issues in the decisions that are made and how people are left out of those decisions. A lot of the planning that happens does not fully engage Black and brown people in the planning. They make meetings at times when people cannot come. They don't properly reach out to the community and don't fully engage so that we can actually have our voices heard.
Okay, that is Mella Bush Miles, who's the Director of Transit-Oriented Development and the T-Riders Union at Alternatives for Community Engagement. Thanks for being here. Stacey Thompson, Executive Director of Livable Streets Alliance, co-author of the report. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
And Greg Sullivan, Research Director at the Pioneer Institute. Thanks.
Thank you.
That's our show for today. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.